Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know what you heard about me, but a bitch can't get a dollar out of me. No Cadillac, no birds, you can't see. Then I'm a motherfucking P.I.M.P. I don't know what you heard about me, but a bitch can't get a dollar out of me. No Cadillac, no birds, you can't see. Then I'm a motherfucking P.I.M.P.
Now shawty, she in the club, she dancing for dollars. She got a thing for that Gucci, that Fendi, that Prada, that BCBG, Burberry, Dolce and Cabana. She feed them fools fantasies, they pay her cause they want her. I spit a little G-man and my gang got her. An hour later, had her ass up in the Ramada. Them trick niggas in the ear saying they think about her. I got the bitch by the bar trying to get a drink about her. She like my style, she like my smile, she like the way I talk. She from the country, then she like me cause I'm from New York. I ain't that nigga trying to holler cause I want some head. I'm that nigga trying to holler cause I want some bread. I could care less how she perform when she in the bed. Bitches that track, catch a date and come and pay the kid. Look baby, this is simple, you can't see. You fucking with me, you fucking with a P.I.M.P.
I don't know what you heard about me, but a bitch can't get a dollar out of me. No Cadillac, no birds, you can't see. Then I'm a motherfucking P.I.M.P.
I don't know what you heard about me, but a bitch can't get a blunt up out of me. I drive a Cadillac where I'm from cause I'm a G, and I'm a motherfucking C-R-I-P. I don't know what you heard about me, but a bitch can't get a crumb up out of me. I drive a Cadillac where I'm from and I'm a G, and I'm a motherfucking P.I.M.P. Yeah, bitch, I got my now later gators on. I'm about to show you how my pimp hand is way strong. You're dead wrong if you think the pimping gon' die. 12 piece with 100 holes by my side. I'm down with that nigga 50 like I'm down with blue. Fuck cuz, nah, nigga, motherfuck you. G-U-N-I-Dizzy, fucking with me and the D.P. Jizzy. Niggas in New York know how doggy get down. I got my niggas in Queen, I got my bitches uptown. I got my business in Manhattan, I ain't fucking around. And got some butter pecan Puerto Ricans from the boogie down. That's waiting on me to return so they can snatch these braids out and put my shit in the perm. Word, they love it when I get to gripping and spitting this smacking magnificent pimping. I don't know what you heard about me, but a bitch can't get a blunt up out of me. I drive a Cadillac where I'm from and I'm a G, cause I'm a motherfucking C-R-I-P. I don't know what you heard about me, but a bitch can't get a crumb up out of me. I drive a Cadillac where I'm from cause I'm a G, and I'm a motherfucking P.I.M.P.
Switch over and ride with a star, then get you far. I'm a P.I.M.P.G.A.N.G.S.E.E.R. Yeah, I'm young, but I ain't dumb. Listen, tricks, but I ain't one. I'm a gorilla for Skrilla. I trip to you, try to run. I let them do as they please, as long as they get my cheese. Even if they gotta freeze, or it's 100 degrees. I keep them on their knees, take a look under my sleeve. I ain't gotta give them much, they happy with Mickey D.
We keep it pimping in the South, you know how it goes. We drive old school, white walls with me. I spend the G-Unit piece and get them dizzy. Handcuff after your lover or your girl coming with me when your neck and wrist close. She already should know that money makes the world go round, so let's get more. It's time to show these players how it should be done. You got pimp potential, you might could be one.
Hollywood, they say there's no business like show business. In the hood, they say there's no business like hoe business. You know? They say I talk a little faster. If you listen a little faster, I ain't got to slow down for you to catch up, bitch.
And this is in light of Donald Trump releasing
documents from the Kennedy assassination. We're going to get into that in a couple of minutes. It is 700 degrees here in Los Angeles. Very, very hot. Do not be outside drinking in the scorching sun. That will kill you. And if you got to be outside in the scorching sun, find shade.
LA Leakers.
The Los Angeles Leakers.
LA Leakers. My home. This is the LA Leakers. Let's go.
LA Leakers.
It's that just cuddle. The sound milk edition.
spent my whole life trying to improvise. I'm not saying that shit for you to sympathize. Spent my whole life trying to find a light that's at the end of the tunnel. I should have realized it was inside. So lately I've been trying to get what's inside outside. So many people want to see my insides outside. I'm from that city 4 hours east to south side, where everyone outside but don't fuck with no outside. It's growing up with the ones I hold it down with. Whole city got my back on some photobomb shit. Whole city blowing up on some ultra down shit. Before this I was the one hoes tried to go to prime with. You know, take the fame, take the crib, take our cars. Now we gotta take the train. Hood niggas taking chains. Slave master take our names. 5-0 take the shot and young souls take the blame, man. But they can't take away the light.
No matter how much they gon' shake
no.
You,
man, they can't fuck with the light.
They can't stop
light.
The shine.
They can't fuck with the light. Hell no, the boy's that bright. Even if you take away my life, you can't take the light.
No matter how much they gon' shake you.
Got the whole city on fire. Boy, this the flow that got Steph Curry inspired. This the flow that got LeBron James finna rewire. This the flow that got my whole family finna retire. Flows on flows, I might drown in this bitch. Yay, found a pro, I guess I'm profound in this bitch. My dad from Louisiana, man, the smallest town. Where if they know you're brown, they might hold you down and even hold you down, man. Since I'm a son, I feel like I gotta stunt hard. I took the hand that they gave me and played the Donald Trump card. I realized counting money never feel as good as counting blessings. And the load of mine is more dangerous than the loaded weapons. So when they take the fame, take the crib, take our cars, now we gotta take the train. And hood niggas taking chains. Slave master take our names. 5-0 take the shot and young souls take the blame. And if they can't take away the light,
no matter how much they gon' shake
nah,
you,
man, they can't fuck with the light.
They can't stop the shine.
Nope, they can't fuck with the light. Hell no, the boy's that bright. Even if you take away my life, you can't take the light.
No matter how much they gon' shake you, don't let them take away your soul. No, no, don't let them take away what makes you whole.
Exhibit and quit, get down with the E double. You get weed trouble. E, make the beat bubble. Make the bass solo. You shake they brick out to the ground and dig them out of B rubble. Party. Happy that you shook the whole crib. And if you got a pound, E dub, I got deal. Cause this is how we do it here. It's ironic that you just stepped into a room of purple hydroponic fat booty bitches sparkling. Trying to take you to a star. Trying to get you to recognize they know who you are. Can't you see the red carpet? They lay it out. And if you got a fantasy, Eric, they play it out. We big figure rap niggas from the gate. We've been waited on and hated on since 88. Now cross my dogs across my path and I'ma wet you. Way down from the Compton town. And I bet you, man.
Sound like Battle Cat and upstairs with Zappers. And the knocking don't stop. I hope nobody don't call the cops. It don't stop, the beat to make it pop lock. Not better yet, cause the shit to keep your Glock cock. You think I'm tripping? Fool, I ain't bullshitting. You better read up on the shit to keep the ladies non-fiction. Watch out for the friction. This West Coast on mine, and fuck anybody dissing, nigga, listen. Doghouse South, cause I'm a gangster crib. See walking, holding on the extra clip. Now you wanna be a friend, but you gon' make me unload and slap the other clip in and reload. You wanna go toe to toe, set my pistol down on the ground, on the pound, nigga, hell no.
I'm not being gangster, cause it just lives in me. And when I see enough, I guess that's when I'll be somebody. What they ever really see, nigga, don't speak on me. I won't stop, so let me be. We all from the street, somebody.
I'm a Long Beach Eastside mad ass lunatic. Gang bang, slap a bitch nigga out to get a grip. On the grind, getting mine, ask the homies on the 920. You know, we still own niggas who talk bitch shit. Real niggas feel this, let's get rich. Under the sun, with the young 2-1s, TLC, and all the DPGs. Down for whatever, whoever wanna see me now. You looking like me, I guess you wanna be me now. It take a whole lot to be Snoop Deep or Dub. You gotta put it down and always stay G'd up. All star shoes with the G apparel. If I fall in the club, I might bust a pair of safety apps. You never catch me looking R&B. I might be in a 3-piece suit looking way OG. Blazing the apps with the homie cat. A rough dog, cause I love putting hustlers on the map. I keep it gangster for show though, low. And always got the motherfucking dodo smoke. For all my lows and kin folks, this is for y'all. Let me hit something, dog. Beware my click. We hopping and dropping. Nothing but the gangster shit. If it ain't chronic, don't blaze it up. And if it ain't a Chevy, don't raise it up. You know we keep it banging, don't fake the fun. For all my real niggas, stay gangster up. We making paper suckers only claim to touch. By sticking to the script and never changing up. You know we keep it banging, don't fake the fun. Keep it real, motherfucker, stay gangster up. Gangster, ha ha, doghouse. Something for the 9-5 plus 4 pennies. Trade E, Goldie Low. Yeah. My nigga Battle Cat on the beat.
For sure.
Puss with the life. Yeah. Westside. Yeah. You can't spell the West without the ES. Oh, yeah. We connecting, y'all. That's how we do it.
Do it to
him. Do it to him. And we out.
See ya.
All right, folks, I promised that I would play some information about the JFK assassination. We got a lot going on in America, current and old. As you know, President Trump is going to finally release these documents from the 60s detailing aspects of the Kennedy assassination. Me personally, I have already concluded how and who killed him, because I have been looking at it probably since sixth grade, just as more information comes out and more people come to the surface with information before they pass. I actually have two clips, JFK assassin unmasked, which is a Illuminati conspiracy theory, secret society, put into effect by the late Bill Cooper, who was probably killed by the same people he are assuming killed JFK. One never knows in the world of conspiracy theories. However, we also have JFK Jr., which is about 42 minutes, who murdered his father. And he was trying to tell you this before he was mysteriously killed, I believe in a plane crash. I want to say a plane crash that was mysterious. My brain is also telling me it could have been a snow incident similar to how Sonny Bono died too, skiing incident. I do remember the file and the case, but I'm not current on it. But at the end of the day, we will play that after we listen to excerpts from William Cooper, a.k.a. Bill Cooper. So this stuff is heavy, folks. Bill Cooper lost his life because of a lot of the research he did. Well, I have no sound. Yeah, folks, that video just went completely nuts. Wow. We'll take a break and come back.
Ain't yelling cut when it's shooting time. Sign up, it's recruiting time. Big wigs with a suit and tie, and them big things got two inside. Fuck wrong with these whole niggas. Don't do coke, I don't blow niggas. I don't tell niggas, I show niggas, and it's never less than like four niggas. Four wings and some french fries. Hot, hot sauce and ketchup, nigga. He telling it, he hiding, but real niggas still catch a nigga. Cop, cop, Rari's, I don't test drive them. Home theaters can't best buy them. These niggas that I roll with, don't let a single thing get by them. King, king, pins and them drug lords. Shot, shot town, no gun lords. Broke bitches that talk shit, now them the bitches I stunt for. Malcolm X daughter came at me. Looking ass niggas ain't happy. Rolled out with some Latin kings and some S-Bays and them plain khakis. Smack bitches, no snack cam. Closed fists, no band camp. Core weapon and core nitty. Queens niggas in his all hoodies. Kidnapping them rob niggas. Core D-Rock for a biggie. Pussy ass little rap niggas. I fuck with real trap niggas. Pop star, icon, but I send niggas. Come snatch niggas. I'm with EBK, you want EBT. Got a black nine, call it BET. School niggas get a GED. And I tease niggas, make them BEG. Got a money fetish, I'ma fly to Venice. Got a big house, I could play some tennis. Lil Herb, what's good? I'm a bad bitch and I fuck good.
Know a couple niggas that's down a ride for a homicide when it's drama time. Run up on a nigga with the llamas flying, leave his love boys all traumatized. 150, I'm really with it, I'll drop his ass in, then forget it. I'm the man around my side of town, might see a bitch and forget I hit it. I'm a young nigga, I be getting money, take your bitch from you. And these niggas don't get no respect, I'ma stay 100 till I'm 600. Matter of fact, I gotta keep it 150. For every nigga that's gonna come with me, I'm on rock block with a new semi and a blue billy and do 1-6. Smoke a lot of weed like fuck kittens, put a Dutch in me. Got a 40 on me, I don't trust any. And if any nigga ever try to end me, I'ma die shooting, praying God forgive me. You too busy hating, you can't get no paper, why y'all so silly? Straight killers, I can cuss so many. I don't love no business, but my mom and sister, my gun and nigga. I'm in Hollywood, came from Case and Food. Shorty standing in the streets with tools. Where I'm from, we don't play no games. Ain't no April Fools, you'll make the news. Why I am, we don't say no names. If you talk to cops, I stay away from you. Keep your mouth shut and them investigations. You be out the station in a day or two. Dedication and a little patience. Leave the domination on my way to greatness. Don't put yourself up in a situation. Put in a relationship, conversation. Shoot an opposition with no hesitation. You get my position, then you better take it. Know some young boys from a while back trying to lead the game, but they never made it. I got old shit killing your shit on a couple tracks. I just never played it. Pussy nigga, you don't want war. I got old clips, bitch, I'm Baron Davis.
Old clips, bitch, I'm Baron Davis.
Pussy nigga, you don't want war, I got old clips, bitch, I'm Baron Davis. Know a couple niggas that's down a ride for a homicide when it's drama time. Run up on a nigga with the llamas flying, leave his love orders all traumatized. 150, I'm really with it, I'll drop his ass in, then forget it. I'm the man around my side of town, might see a bitch and forget I hit it.
Gang, gang, gang shit, man, you already know I'm rocking, man. It's G Herbo, shout out Nicki Minaj, you already know, man. SB just gave me the nine with the green beans, just give me the green light. Let niggas have it, man. We pull it up anywhere, wet and shit, man. Got 50s in them Techs, 50s in them Max, man. 30s in them Glocks, 17 shot Berettas, all that shit, man. Sawed offs, pumps, all that shit, man. What you want? How you want it? What you want it? When you want it, man? Let's get it. And I ride solo from state to state, even when I ain't 150, man. Shot rock all the way to Queens. Let's get it.
I suppose most people think that from the day he saluted his father's casket at just 3 years old till the evening his plane went down,
and
he just went about his business, winning the game's life like everyone else. After all, he did live, for the most part, a relatively ordinary life, in spite of being the prince of America's Camelot. So, what do you suppose was going on in the mind of the sexiest man alive? He could have written his own political ticket, yet he went into publishing. Many expected him to land in politics and most likely were a bit perplexed when he decided to publish a magazine instead. Some thought he was afraid to go into politics because of the Kennedy curse. However, nothing could be further from the truth. What he did proved to be more dangerous than any political arena, and he knew this from the start. But John had a mission, and that mission was to expose the villain who orchestrated the dastardly act upon his father. Unbeknownst to the public, John was digging deep for proof. And how else could he expose the truth when all the media outlets were controlled by the very cabal he planned to expose? Enter George. When he presented his magazine, George, to the world, he was, for all practical purposes, signing his own death warrant. George was a veiled threat dot in a symbolic sort of way. Did you see? How many men named George comes to mind at just the thought of President John F. Kennedy's so-called assassination? The cabal wanted his father dead, that is a fact, but the namesake of John F. Kennedy Jr.'s magazine dot their minion arranged it, and at once he had the proof. The truth would come out in his very own magazine. Did you see? As president, John F. Kennedy understood the predatory nature of private central banking. He understood why Andrew fought so hard to end the Second Bank of the United States. So Kennedy wrote and signed Executive Order 11110, which ordered the U.S. Treasury to issue a new public currency, the United States note. Kennedy was working with President Soekarno of Indonesia, who was at that time the signatory for the global collateral accounts, which were intended to be used for humanitarian purposes, but which were subverted at the time of the Bretton Woods Agreement at the end of World War II. The intention of Kennedy and Soekarno was to end the reign of the globalist privately owned central banking system, which is the main reason that Kennedy was killed, and for his part, Soekarno remained under house arrest for the rest of his life. Some, all wars are bankers' wars. There was a rumor that John had obtained the proof he needed and been exposed was in the works until his untimely, and mostly suspicious, death. Of course, the media campaigned that he was an irresponsible thrill seeker, but then they would, wouldn't they? Although many people knew JFK Jr. was murdered, and they lied about who was responsible, but they were just wrong about the reason. John Jr. was warned by family members about the risks involved in his pursuit, but he was determined to give justice for his father and bring truth to light, exposing the darkness that shrouds our planet. So ask yourself, Dot, what would you do if you were a mere babe when your father, who just happened to be the most important man in the country, was murdered in such a gruesome manner, and you never had the opportunity to know him? Dot, you just let it go. Although he was from one of the main Illuminati family bloodlines, JFK was in fact trying to undo some of the mess and to bring an end to the reserve banking system. For his efforts, he was assassinated on November 22, 1963. The Bush connections. Many researchers and historians had come to the conclusion that it was the elite power structure running the U.S. government that were responsible for the assassination of JFK, and that there was more than one reason for them doing so. There are photographs claiming to show that George Bush was at Dealey Plaza on the day of the killing, and while they might be inconclusive, there are multiple other sources that George Bush was one of those responsible for the assassination of JFK and that he was indeed there that day. The Dark Legacy takes an in-depth look into the evidence supporting this. Dark Legacy. It Never Ends. More Startling Evidence of Bush in Dallas by John Hankey, thedarklegacy.com. I don't think we are much encouraged to see history as science. Quite the opposite, actually. And of course, that's all politics. The winners write history, and the truth be damned. Even science can have trouble trying to act like science when political issues are involved, as we see with evolution, tobacco and cancer, and global warming. But I think history does have a lot in common with physical science. For example, I can remember when continental drift, the idea that Africa and America were once stuck together, was very much considered just a theory, ridiculed by some, and regarded with amusement by many, and promulgated as likely by a tiny minority. 50 men have run America, and that's a high figure. Joseph Kennedy, father of JFK, in the July 26, 1936 issue of the New York Times. But as time goes by, the evidence accumulates, and the meaning of old evidence begins to settle in, and ideas that were once considered outrageous gradually get worn in and start to be regarded as obvious common sense. Part of this process is the continual accumulation of new evidence. New pieces are added to the puzzle and the picture becomes more clear. And sometimes the hidden meaning of old evidence that has been lying around for years suddenly jumps out. Evidence of the fossils and minerals that can be found on the east coast of Africa and on the west coast of Brazil may have been lying around for years before someone decided to look and see if they matched and found that they did. And proved conclusively that West Africa and Brazil were once attached. With regard to George H.W. Bush and the murder of John Kennedy, Joseph McBride found this memo in 1988. FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover wrote this memo 5 days after the assassination, naming George Bush as a CIA officer. The last and most crucial paragraph is very hard to read. The following is a transcription. The substance of the foregoing information was orally furnished to Mr. George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency and Captain William Edwards of the Defense Intelligence Agency on November 23, 1963, by Mr. V.T. Forsyth of this Bureau. When it was first released in 1978, George Bush was an obscure bureaucrat, a virtual unknown. So when the best researchers on the planet saw this memo in 1978, They didn't pay much attention to it. When Bush became vice president 2 years later, no one was able to connect his now well-known name to this obscure memo. But when Joseph McBride was messing around in 1988, Bush was running for president, and when McBride saw the memo, he jumped up and shouted, "Hey, this memo is about Bush. It says he was in the CIA way back in 1963. And for the longest time, the focus was on this simple isolated fact that Hoover said Bush was in the CIA in 63. Bush said the memo must be referring to another George Bush, because he wasn't in the CIA at that time. But over the years, people were able to assemble the facts from Bush's personal life, showing his deep involvement with the CIA at that time, and with the CIA's anti-Castro Cubans. In the memo, Hoover calls them misguided anti-Castro Cubans. And over time, it has become undeniable that Hoover was referring, in his memo, to none other than George Herbert Walker Bush. And for a while, that was it. End of story. But the title of this Hoover memo is Assassination of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Isn't that important? Well, you think so. But for the longest time, no one made much of it. Besides, Hoover scarcely mentions the assassination in the memo, instead focusing on these misguided anti-Castro Cubans. The body of the memo does not appear, at first, to be in any way related to the title of the memo, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. But then Mark Rain, in his book Rush to Judgment, did the fabulous work of demonstrating, and in fact persuading a jury, that E. Howard Hunt, a major lieutenant in the CIA's misguided anti-Castro Cuban program, was in Dallas and involved in the assassination. With this background, with this framework to guide the researcher, it was then possible to assemble the considerable evidence linking Bush to Hunt. People might have taken some notice before that Bush made the unusual request, as Nixon's ambassador to the UN, to be given an office in the White House. They may have noticed that Hunt, although he was not being paid by anyone in the White House or answering to anyone that we know of in the White House, also had a White House office. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are as a people inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. Our way of life is under attack. Those who make themselves our enemy are advancing around the globe. No war ever posed a greater threat to our security. If you are awaiting a finding of clear and present danger, then I can only say that the danger has never been more clear and its presence has never been more imminent. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. But with the Hoover memo in hand, establishing Bush as a supervisor of the CIA's misguided anti-Castro Cuban operation, it is possible to connect Bush to Hunt at the Bay of Pigs. With this memo in hand, it is possible to connect Bush and Hunt as two CIA operatives with offices inside the White House. With this memo in hand, it is possible to answer who it was that Hunt answered to inside the White House, and how he got the office in the first place. And with all that, it is possible to connect Bush to Hunt, and therefore to Dallas, to Hunt in Dallas, and to the misguided anti-Castro Cuban assassins of John Kennedy. J. Edgar Hoover, which is what Hoover did for us when he wrote the title of the memo. Little by little, the pieces start to fall into place. And pieces that in isolation meant nothing become key parts of a whole picture. But even so, this is not a rock-solid connection. Hunt was directly involved in the murder of JFK and Bush supervised Hunt. But Bush probably supervised a lot of CIA people, not all of whom were directly involved in the assassination. A high-ranking officer may be connected to all of the acts of all of his troops by reason of his being their commander, but it's not a direct connection. It doesn't establish that the officer knew about, or approved of, or was involved in all the actions of those troops. Enter FBI memo number 2. It will come up again in a minute, so please read the first line carefully. Bush identifies himself to the FBI as an independent oil man from Houston. This memo establishes that sort of direct connection between Bush and Hunt in Dallas on the day of the assassination. This memo records Bush's phone call to the FBI precisely an hour and 15 minutes after the assassination. When I first encountered this memo, and when I first put it into my movie, JFK 2, I simply called it weird. I saw it only in isolation, a weird, isolated connection between Bush and the assassination. It took me years to see it in context. That is, to see that this phone call demonstrates, clearly, that George Bush was on duty that day. He was staying at the Dallas Sheridan because his duty assignment was in Dallas. His phone call to the FBI cannot have been random. This James Baird worked for Bush as a sign painter. He was not an assassin. This phone call is not what it purports to be. Bush was fulfilling some obscure undercover function in making this call. So the phone call has to be seen as part of a CIA assignment, which was clearly connected to the assassination. This memo then establishes that Bush was in the Dallas area and on duty, and that his duty assignment was connected to the assassination. And if his men were in Dallas shooting the president, as they were, he was certainly on duty supervising them. The Society. Society of Jesus, a.k.a. the Jesuits, employed a variety of ruthless tactics to accomplish its long-term goal of a new world order which pays homage to their black pope. One is carrying out political assassinations of world leaders who refuse to comply with its demands. These assassinations in the U.S. have included presidents, Abraham Lincoln, JFK, cabinet members, congressmen, senators, diplomats, journalists, scientists and religious and business leaders. Assassinations are carried out by the aforementioned intelligence agencies and their mafia partners in the drug and gambling trades, often with collateral assistance from the Knights of Malta, the Freemasons, the Knights of Columbus, and Propaganda Do, P2. Such was the case in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy and some former popes. If he were not supposed to be supervising them, his bosses would have assigned him to be at his home office in Houston, Texas, or on his oil rigs in the Caribbean. But, even in context, this memo in the phone call it describes is still weird. No? I mean, how could Bush have been so stupid as to make this insanely incriminating phone call? Without this FBI memo, recording this phone call, we don't know, or even have a good clue as to where Bush was, or what he was doing the day of the assassination. Do we? Bush has, until recently, simply said that he did not remember what he was doing the day of the assassination. But with this memo, Bush tells us where he was and what he was doing. He hands us his head on a silver platter. What could possibly have motivated him to make such a stupid error as making this phone call to the FBI? It's a valid question. It's not an essential question. We can still value this memo and extract a great deal of important content from it without answering the question of why, but the question remains. And we can make a stab at answering it. Les Baker, in his fine book, Family of Secrets, suggests that Bush was attempting to establish an alibi. Now, by making this phone call, he, in fact, establishes that he was in the Dallas area and that he was on duty related to the assassination. So if he's trying to establish an alibi to cover up where he actually was and what he was actually doing, what he is trying to cover up must be some pretty bad stuff, some pretty incriminating stuff, if it's worse than what he gives us with this alibi. And what could be worse than what he gives us? Well, obviously, he must have actually been in Dallas. In fact, I think this situation suggests he must have actually been in Dealey Plaza. I mean, seriously. Think about it. He's so panicked about the truth coming out that he puts his head in the noose and hands it to us. It makes me think he must have been in Dealey Plaza. He must have been in the company of the shooters, and he must have felt that there would be evidence to prove that. We're just speculating at the moment. We'll get to the evidence right now, but I'm trying to set the scene. If a guilty party is in a panic, trying to cover evidence connecting them to a crime, they may invent an explanation or an alibi. That seems like a good idea at the time, but that in fact constitutes a very damaging admission. At least in my mind, if you're an officer like Bush, you're the coach. You plan, you train and prepare your people, and then you stand back and watch it happen. Or so I thought. Fletcher Prouty was certain that he saw pictures of Ed Lansdale, a military operative of the highest rank, signaling to the tramps arrested behind the grassy knoll to be cool, that everything was all right. Hunt was a high-ranking CIA officer, chief of the CIA's Mexico station, and his son says he is one of the tramps who show up in several photos of men who were arrested behind the grassy knoll. So, some of the highest-ranking members of the Pillar's operation were apparently there, on the front line, to make sure that when things went wrong, as they inevitably do, these high-ranking officers could be there to fix whatever the problem was. So, given that high and low-ranking CIA officers were present, this photo of this gunman innocent might, indeed, be Bush. It's possible. And now, look at this picture of the Dowtex building. The Dowtex building is across the street from the book depository, and many leading researchers into the assassination, including Jim Garrison, say there was certainly a team of shooters in this building. And as you can see, some imaginative individual has added some color to indicate three men in this window. Very creative, very imaginative, and at least plausible. Still, it takes way too much imagination and effort to see Bush's face. Actually, you don't have to stop and read it, because I'll quote the relevant part. It's a statement from Roger Craig, winner of the Deputy of the Year Award for Dallas in 1960, and one of the most honest men working that day in Dallas. He's an amazing and heroic fellow, worthy of all the time you could take looking into his background and character. And here, in the following passage, he is describing a conversation he had with Jim Garrison, and he says, Jim also asked me about the arrests made in Dealey Plaza the day. I told him I knew of 12 arrests, one in particular made by R.E. Vaughn of the Dallas Police Department. The man Vaughn arrested was coming from the Dowtex building across from the Texas School Book Depository. The only thing which Vaughn knew about him was that he was an independent toil operator from Houston, Texas. The prisoner was taken from Vaughn by Dallas police detectives, and that was the last that he saw or heard of the suspect. Holy moly. Please notice that, in speaking to Jim Garrison, Craig says in particular, apparently he and Vaughn thought this was the most significant arrest made that day. Pretty amazing given that he thought Howard Hunt was arrested in the rail yard behind the grassy knoll. And the only thing Craig knew about this particular arrestee was that he had exactly the same singular CIA cover, an independent oil operator from Houston, Texas, that George Bush had used that same day in his contact with the FBI. Now, there are a very limited number of possible explanations for who this independent oil operator was. Let's look at them. It is conceivable that the CIA had two men in Dallas area that day, supervising the shooters, who both had the designated cover of being an independent oil operator from Houston. Bush was one, as the evidence above clearly shows, and perhaps there was another who was with the shooters in the Dowtex building, supervising them directly. But unless the CIA overlords were trying to set Bush up, they would not have told anyone else to use Bush's CIA cover to identify themselves to the police. If another man was involved in the crime and was arrested for it, and he told the cops he was an independent oil operator from Houston, this would tend to throw suspicion in Bush's direction. The Kazarian Mafia's intense hatred of anyone who professed faith in any god but their god Baal has motivated them to murder kings and royalty and make sure they can never rule. They have done the same with American presidents, running sophisticated covert operations to disempower them. If that doesn't work, the KM assassinates them, like they did to McKinley, Lincoln, and JFK. The KM wants to eliminate any strong rulers or elected officials who dare to resist their Babylonian money magic power or their covert power gained from their deployment of their human compromise network. Bush's association with the CIA Cubans was already widely known. Fletcher proudly knew and wrote of it. Fabian S. Calami, the head of Cuban counterintelligence, knew and has written about it. James Files, who claims very credibly to have been a driver for the mafia shooters in Dallas, has spoken on camera about it. And FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover knew about it and wrote about it in his memo. So Bush was already a suspect in Hoover's eyes. The CIA planners then would not have told anyone else. In case you get arrested, tell the cops you're an independent oil man from Houston, right? They would not have done this, since it would tend to incriminate Bush, who was already in a highly visible, highly suspicious position. Another unlikely possibility is that this independent oil operator from Houston was just some innocent oil operator who somehow managed to attract suspicion and was arrested. Do you think it's possible that another oil man from Houston just happened to be in that corner of Dealey Plaza? Dealey, 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 Dealey. Dealey Plaza today. I hope you think it's possible, because, as unlikely as it seems, if you think it was possible, then certainly Bush would have been reasonable in thinking that, as he was being arrested, there were other independent oil operators in the crowd who witnessed his arrest. You see, Bush spoke to a group of oil men in Dallas the night before the assassination. If it were possible that some of them were in Dealey Plaza, he would need to be terrified of the possibility that some of them might actually have seen the arrest and would have been able to identify him as the object of that arrest. No wonder, then, that Bush freaked out and made this stupid incriminating phone call to the FBI, even if it shows that he was not in Houston or in the Caribbean, but in Dallas. At least it suggested that he was not in police custody for the murder of the president in the Dealey Plaza. But now stop and think a minute. Why was he arrested? What was he doing that drew this cop's attention at all? What could he possibly have been doing to make this cop think that he needed to arrest Bush? Perhaps walking out of a building without attracting attention is harder than it sounds, and it reasonable to suppose that the crowd outside the Galatex building had heard the shots, had heard that the president had been wounded, and they were carefully scrutinizing anyone who came out of the building. But this story shows clearly that Bush was not the sort of cold-blooded killer who could take part in the murder of a man and then act and look like nothing was going on as he tried to leave the scene of the crime. And it turns out that as an old man, Bush continues to suffer from this character trait of being unable to hide feelings that need to be kept secret. As you can see below, at Jerry Ford's funeral, Bush suddenly breaks into a wide grin while speaking of the Kennedy assassination. This is not a Mona Lisa smile. This is face-wrenching spasm of glee. In a minute, we'll take up the question of why Bush would grin at his recollection of watching John Kennedy's brain splatter. The point for us now is that he apparently had a similarly inappropriate, show-stopping expression on his face as he attempted to exit the Galatex building. He had the look of a murderer in his eye, so clearly that it could not be missed, as this funereal grin could not be missed. And the guilt plastered all over Bush's face drew people's attention. And this cop, Vaughn, arrested him. Now remember, Roger Craig tells this story in the context of his discussions with New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison about the suspects who were arrested that day and who then evaporated without leaving a mugshot, interview, fingerprints, or name. Garrison spoke not only to Roger Craig, but he no doubt spoke to Vaughn, who made the arrest. And Garrison adds the following. At least one man arrested immediately after the shooting had come running out of the Galatex building and offered no explanation for his presence there. Local authorities hardly could avoid arresting him because of the clamor of the onlookers. He was taken to the sheriff's office, where he was held for questioning. However, the sheriff's office made no record of the questions asked to the suspect, if any were asked, nor did it have a record of his name. Later, two uniformed police officers escorted him out of the building to the jeers of a waiting crowd. They put him in a police car, and he was driven away. Apparently, this was his farewell to Dallas, for he simply disappeared forever. This vision of the panicked Bush being arrested, no doubt terrified as he was taken to the police station, and possibly even booked, though the record of any such booking has been destroyed, provides a context that explains a number of Bush's otherwise mysterious actions. Certainly, Bush was freaked out and panic-stricken. An angry crowd clamored for his arrest and jeered his release. Being a newbie in these dark affairs, Bush didn't have confidence in the ability of the old devils at CIA to make water run uphill, to make time run backwards, to silence the witnesses, to destroy the record, and make it all go away. And so he panicked. He acted on his own, stupidly. He called the FBI, thinking that he was cleverly providing evidence that it wasn't him who was arrested in front of the Dallatex building that day. In his panic-stricken state, this seemed like a good idea. He was unable to see that he was actually creating a permanent and absolutely positive record of his involvement. We can now also explain the grin. He grinned ridiculously at Jerry Ford's funeral at the mention of John Kennedy's murder, not because he is such a ghoul that he thinks splattering the contents of Kennedy's head all over Jackie Kennedy was funny, but because mentioning the assassination causes him to recall the comedy of errors that produced his own ridiculous panic, arrest, more panic, and so on. Garrison wrote his paragraph about Bush's arrest in 1988. Deputy Craig's article was written in 1971 and posted in 1992, but the significance of these paragraphs was discovered last week. There hardly was an internet in 1992 when Craig's article was posted, and for 19 years, no one noticed that this phrase, "independent oil man from Houston," is a very unique description of Bush. No one noticed until last month when one of the moderators of Murder Solved showed it to me. And I wrote about it to some friends, and one of them suggested I read what young Garrison had to say. So the pieces continued to fall into place. Little by little, the picture is filled in, the questions get answered, and the conclusions become more incontrovertible. This is just the sort of thing that happens with the theory of evolution and the Big Bang theory, and the theory of continental drift, all three of which are actually bunkum. And someday they may start to teach history as a science, based on evidence in the universities. Really, it could happen. At which point, Bush's involvement in JFK's murder will be taught, like evolution, as the only plausible explanation of the available reliable evidence. Final note, until recently, Bush had nothing more to say about his whereabouts the day of the assassination than that he doesn't remember where he was. That in itself is extraordinarily incriminating. Everyone who was alive at the time remembers where they were on 9/11 and on the day Kennedy was murdered. But saying that he doesn't remember, however improbable, is at least consistent with Bush's autobiography, which mentions nothing. Lately, however, perhaps at least partly in response to my work, Bush and company have concocted a story that he was speaking in Tyler, Texas to the Rotary Club. The vice president of the Rotary Club, Aubrey Irby, says that Bush was speaking when the bellhop came over and told him that Kennedy was dead. Kitty Kelly, The Family, The Real Story of the Bush Dynasty, P.213, cited by Russ Baker in Family of Secrets, P.54. Mr. Irby passed the information on to Mr. Wendell Cherry, who passed it on to Bush, who stopped his speech. Irby says that Bush explained that he thought a political speech, under the circumstances, was inappropriate. And then he sat down. As a would-be alibi proving Bush's innocence, there are at least three huge problems with this story. The first is that it is inconceivable that Bush would not have remembered such an event, or that he would have left it out of his autobiography, since it shows what a fun and respectful fellow he is. If he didn't remember it sooner, or include it in his autobiography, it's clearly because it never happened. The second huge problem with this story is that it couldn't possibly have happened. That is, it is made impossible by Bush's original alibi, his phone call to the FBI, as you will see. The witness who tells this story, Aubrey Irby, says that Bush excused himself and sat down. It doesn't say that he rushed out of the room in a frantic search for a phone. The problem is that Walter Cronkite's announcement to the world that Kennedy was dead came at 1:38 p.m., certainly, no one was listening to Walter Cronkite in the same room in which Bush was speaking. Therefore, we can be sure that this bellhop who sold Darby that Kennedy was dead, was in another room. The bellhop had to make the decision that he had heard enough of the news to leave off listening to the news. This is no small point. Texas Governor Connally was severely wounded. Lyndon Johnson was reportedly wounded. There was much other news to be confirmed. At some point, then, the bellhop decided to stop listening and go make an announcement. There's no reason to think Kirby would be the first person he would tell. But at some point, he went to the room where Bush was speaking and informed Mr. Irby that the president was dead. This walk to find Irby took time, of course. Mr. Irby had to receive the information, and then he had to decide to inform Mr. Wendell Cherry, the president of the Duanes. Mr. Cherry had to decide that he should interrupt Bush's speech. Mr. Cherry had to then walk over to Bush and tell him the news. Bush had to decide what to say, and he had to say it. And, according to the only witness, Mr. Irby, Bush then sat down. Somehow, when he was finished sitting, without attracting Mr. Irby's attention, Bush had to seek and find a phone. This would have been a hotel phone, so he would likely have had to go through the hotel switchboard to get an outside line. Did you suppose the switchboard was busy after the announcement of the president's death? It's a good guess. In Washington, D.C., so many people rushed to make a phone call that the phone system went down. In any case, once he got through to the hotel operator and got an outside line, Bush then had to call information and get the number of the FBI. After getting through to information and getting the number, he then had to call the FBI and penetrate their switchboard, which was, no doubt, very busy, and he had to locate an agent on what must have been the busiest day in the history of the Dallas Bureau. How many minutes do you suppose that would take? 20 seems a fair guess, though it seems impossible that a civilian could even get through, given all the official police business going on at the time. We know that the Dallas FBI was all over the murder scene, confiscating camera film and intimidating witnesses, so it's hard to imagine how Bush, an hour after the shooting, was able to reach an agent at all. Given the sitting that Mr. Irby observed Bush doing, for all this to have transpired in 45 minutes would be tidy work. But Bush had to do all of this, as the FBI memo states, by 1:45, 7 minutes after the news of Kennedy's death first went out, which is blatantly impossible. The third problem is this question of why Bush would feel that it was necessary to concoct such a story at all. Why does he have to tell us this lie? Why does he have to get others, like Kirby, to lie for him? The irony is that the harder he tries to make himself appear innocent by lying, the more evidence he gives us of his guilt. There are some people who manage to point to this and say, aha, that's why Bush was in Dallas. Not to kill the president, but to speak to the other oil men. But as the Hoover memo shows, being an oil man was just a cover for Bush's real occupation as a CIA supervisor of trained killers. He needed an excuse for being in Dallas. This speaking engagement provided him with one. From the director of Dark Legacy, John Hankey. George Bush killed Kennedy. Or was it the mafia? Maybe Castro did it. Who cares? It was 40 years ago. What difference does it make? It matters. The day he died, we lost an invaluable treasure. This video documents that we lost a man of peace who tried to cool off the Cold War and to get the American people to see their Russian enemies, not as despicable and human monsters, but as people like us. On November 22, 1963, you lost the man who saved your life on October 17, 1962. At the height of the missile crisis, Kennedy's generals and advisors were urging him to launch a first strike attack against Cuba. They assured Kennedy that the Russian missiles in Cuba were not nuclear and were not ready, but that he and they should quietly slip away to the safety of bomb shelters anyway, just to be safe, and then launch an attack, leaving the rest of us out to die. Kennedy thought about it, and then he told them that nobody was going anywhere. If anyone died, they would be the first to go, sitting as they were in the White House, the prime target of those Russian missiles. Together, they then figured out a safer plan. Robert McNamara, Secretary of Defense at the time, recently learned from the Russians that the missiles were armed, were ready, were nuclear, and that their commanders were authorized to use them in case of an attack. If you live in the Northern Hemisphere, the lives of your parents and your future were certainly saved by John Kennedy on that day. It matters that his killers be exposed. And while Kennedy famously went after the CIA and refused to commit troops to Vietnam, I always wondered why he didn't more openly attack this military-industrial complex. And then I stumbled upon a speech he gave at the United Nations. As you will see in the video, he called upon the Russians and the United Nations to help him to take on this military-industrial complex in order to abolish all armies and all weapons. But he was swept away. And in the years since, millions have died in needless wars, trillions of dollars have been wasted on defense, and millions more people have lived and died needlessly in poverty. It matters that we lost him. In 2007, Bruce Willis told Vanity Fair magazine, "They still haven't caught the guy that killed Kennedy. I'll get killed for saying this, but I'm pretty sure those guys are still in power, in some form. The entire government of the United States was co-opted." Now Willis probably would not mind my suggesting that he's no genius. At best, his observation is common sense. 80% of the American people agree with him. Indeed, this video, proving that Kennedy was brought down by the most powerful men in the world and their hired thugs, is not based on secret documents. It is all information that has merely been suppressed. Oswald allegedly shot Kennedy from behind, but the day he died, the N. White Hinds carried the story, told by the doctors in Dallas, that Kennedy had an entrance wound in his throat, another in his right temple, and a large gaping exit wound in the back of his head. After talking to the emergency room doctors, Kennedy's press secretary described, to the assembled press, a shot to the right temple from the right front that went right through the head. All of the witnesses near the right front, the grassy knoll, described hearing shots from that direction, and dozens of witnesses raced up the knoll in pursuit of the shooters. These witnesses talked to the press, but all of this information has been suppressed for the last 50 years. By whom? Who could? You will also see in this video the overwhelming best evidence from the best witnesses proving beyond a reasonable dispute that Kennedy's body was stolen from Air Force One and the wound to his right temple was mutilated before the autopsy. Jackie Kennedy kept watch over an empty casket on the flight from Dallas to Bethesda Naval Hospital. When the body was quietly taken to Bethesda for the autopsy, arriving 20 minutes before Jackie and the empty casket, who had the power to arrange this? Who has the power today to suppress all this evidence and to continue to bombard us with ridiculous lies about your own government? It's a short list, isn't it? It doesn't include the Mafia or the Russians or Castro. It does include the Bush family, or rather their masters in big oil, the banking elite, the backbone of the military-industrial complex. These men and their successors carried out the attacks of 9/11. It matters. Operation Northwoods. In the covert war against the communist regime in Cuba under the CIA's Operation Mongoose, the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff unanimously proposed state-sponsored acts of terrorism inside the United States. The plan included shooting down hijacked American airplanes, the sinking of U.S. ships, and the shooting of Americans on the streets of Washington, D.C. The outrageous plan even included a staged NASA disaster that would claim the life of astronaut John Glenn. Reeling under the embarrassing failure of the CIA-sponsored Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba, President Kennedy rejected the plan in March of 1962. A few months later, Kennedy denied the plan's author, General Lyman Lindmitzer, a second term as the nation's highest-ranking military officer. In November of 1963, Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas.
For additional information, please visit our website, TheEventIsComingSoon.com, and our Facebook page at Facebook.com/TheEventIsComingSoon. Your alternative news source for disclosure and the event. Make sure you search our library of videos. You may have missed some very important information and intel. Remember to subscribe to receive updates on our new videos. Stay tuned. We leave you in the love and the light of the one infinite creator. The full and rejoicing in the power and the peace of the one creator. Victory of the light.
I need to do that from time to time. We are looking into the Kennedy assassination. He did 42 minutes of JFK Jr.'s findings. And now we're listening to William Cooper, who also rests in peace. And this is an hour and a half, so we'll get through as most as we
cut
can.
Cut off by the railroad overpass. In other words, the pyramid has no capstone. You'll also notice that the large pyramid of Dealey Plaza is divided into two smaller pyramids by Main Street running through the center of Dealey Plaza, making three total triangles or pyramids, with the three eyes of the pyramid being the three underpasses underneath the railroad overpass. So you will notice that there are three pyramids and three eyes in the pyramids. Three and three are six for the first six. The second thing that you will notice are that there are four quarters of a Druid or Celtic temple of the sun. An exact twin of the temple of the sun making up the outer courtyard of the Vatican. One quarter of the temple, representing one of the seasons of the year, is on the grassy knoll. The second, representing another season of the year, is just a little to the right of the center of the screen. Another one is just above Kennedy's head in the portrait in the right lower corner of your screen. The fourth is off the screen and is just below Kennedy's portrait, on the knoll, directly opposite the grassy knoll, which is so famous in the Kennedy assassination war. This is significant as it indicates a branch of the mystery school of Mystery Babylon who worshiped the sun or the god that is represented by the sun, which in all cases turns out to be the light or Lucifer, also known as Osiris or Ra. In all actuality, these are just symbols for the intellect. They believe that man was held prisoner in the Garden of Eden by an unjust, vindictive, and very cruel god in the chains, the bonds of ignorance, and that man was set free by Lucifer through his agent Satan with the gift of intellect, and through the use of the intellect, man himself will become God. Now, if you look at the quarter section of the Temple of the Sun, just to the right of the center of the screen, you will see just to the right of it an obelisk. The obelisk is the symbol of the phallus, the missing part of Osiris, the penis, the lost word of Freemasonry. And you will see that it almost points directly in to the parking garage opening where Lee Harvey Oswald was himself assassinated. Now, we already have one six symbolized by the three triangles and the three eyes and the three triangles. The second six is symbolized by the sixth floor window where supposedly Lee Harvey Oswald fired the fatal three shots. In reality, he was not even up there, and you will see that later on in this documentary. But now we have two sixes. What is the third six? We have three shots and three wounds. Three and three are six. So now we have the 666, which is significant. It is the number of a man. What is that man? It is the illumined man. It is the man who will rule the world in the New World Order. It is those who call themselves the guardians of the secrets of the ages, the initiates, the adepts, the priests of the mystery school of the ancient religion of Babylon. Now, also significant in the study of Dealey Plaza is the fact that Kennedy was killed on November the 22nd, 1963. November is the 11th month at 11 to 22, and again you have 33. The meritorious degree awarded only to those who do something significant towards the furtherance of the plan or the completion of the great work. Now, you should understand that John F. Kennedy was murdered on the anniversary date of Pope Clement V's papal bull condemning the Knights Templar to torture by the Dominican monks under the Inquisition. The exact anniversary date. Well, you see, the papal bull was issued on November the 22nd in the year 1307. Now, if you subtract the year 1307 from 1963, the answer you get is 666. And folks, that is no accident. You figure it out. Now, there's much, much more of the occult significance connected with Dealey Plaza here, but I'm not going to go into it. I'll leave that for you to explore and discover for yourself. Or when you find out that the Knights of Malta, the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, the Order of St. John of Jerusalem, the Ancient Order of the Rose and Cross, are all different branches of the Knights Templar, then you will understand that John F. Kennedy was assassinated in an outdoor temple of the sun by the Knights Templar in a combination probably of initiates or adepts or priests of the Babylonian Mystery School from all of the different branches now controlled by the Knights Templar. At the time of day, when the sun is most high, and in the ancient religion, it was said that when the sun was most high, he was doing his father's work in the temple. The temple being Dealey Plaza, his father's work was the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Now, John F. Kennedy suffered three wounds, one in the back, one in the throat, one in the head. The exact same wound suffered by Hiram Abiff in the Masonic Initiation. Hiram Abiff, the Masonic Initiation, has nothing to do with the master builder of the Temple of Solomon in actual history. But Hiram Abiff is the representation of Jacques de Molay, who was burned at the stake by the Pope and Philip V. And he was the Grand Master of the Knights Templar. The three wounds suffered by Hiram Abiff in the Masonic Initiation, and in reality by Jacques de Molay, represent ignorance, superstition, and fear, which are symbolic of the church, the state, and the mob. The mob, of course, is us. What happened in Dealey Plaza? Was the carrying out of the revenge of the Knights Templar upon the church, the state, and the mob. John F. Kennedy is the first and only Catholic president in this country, a country established and ruled by the Knights Templar. In the personification, or in the publicly known branch of Mystery Babylon, called Freemasonry.
All right, folks, we're just going to have to shut this down. This show's over. Sorry that it had to go this way.
Hey, you tell me, hey, you tell me. Scared that nigga won't pull up. Hold on, me shit too up. Bitch ain't shit, nigga, straight up.
Believe that.
Y'all pussy nigga can't play up. Both y'all broke at me.
You broke, nigga.
Perp, I'll smoke that nigga.
Straight kush, nigga.
Oh, you want some of this money? Get lights, y'all niggas ain't about it. My bitch ain't less than a dime. I ain't buying less than a nine. Y'all niggas can't get zero.
That's nothing.
Think he got something on me though?
Nah.
Fuck these niggas, man. They ain't got none on my swag.
Nigga
think he's done with a girl, man. That bitch ain't bad. I'm floored the street, man. Niggas say you want my connect. Pussy nigga quit playing, man. Walk for a run.
So what's happening? Anything could happen from the way these hoes acting.
of national security was created so that organizations like the Central Intelligence Agency and the National Security Agency could be erected to further the plan as completion of the great work. The destruction of the sovereignty of all nation states, the destruction of all religions, putting all peoples into the shackles of slavery, and bringing about socialist state. Socialist and the mystery school's conception. United States of America. In the